You were just so selfless in how you've led the PTO and have contributed so much to our children at Torah Academy, and really enhanced everything that goes on within the school, and we so much appreciate it as the parents what you're doing for our children. So really, thank you. Any more source booklets? Or okay, all right. So tonight I want to talk a little bit about Lag BaOmer. Lag BaOmer is a little bit of an obscure holiday. You know, when we go into Sukkot and Rosh Hashanah and Pesach and Shavuos, everything kind of has a theme, has a symbol, has that food attached to it, has like something special about it. And we know that Lag BaOmer is a special day because we know that our kids have special trips and, you know, it's something's going on, the haircuts and the music, and we know that there is definitely meaning to it, but not many of us really understand the essence of a day, why it's important. So I'm not coming to you tonight with major chidushim and, you know, earth-shattering developments in this day, but I do think it's nice once in a while to just learn about the essence of a day that's not as taught about as often, and to try to figure out how we could find meaning and purpose and pull out from this day what we can to enhance our lives and to make us better people. So that's my goal tonight. I hope I accomplish it. So Lag BaOmer, it's a funny kind of day. We know it's a special day. It's not an official holiday. You know, the nature of the day is kind of confusing. We know it's the middle of a mourning period, but we know that the mourning period kind of ends, so it's a celebration day. We know it's a happy day, but it's the middle of a sad period of time, and it's kind of confusing. So literally what Lag BaOmer means is 33. It's the 33rd day of the Omer. And traditionally we are told that it's a happy day. It's a celebratory day. And it's in the middle of, but it's kind of, is the end of a mourning period. So I'm going to get into exactly what it's about. So what is it? What are we doing on Lag BaOmer? What is it about specifically? So during Sfira, as we know, Sfira are the days of mourning because a terrible tragedy occurred. We know that Rabbi Akiva had many disciples, many students, and he did incredible things for the Jewish people during that time in producing all these students and all this Torah during that time. And then very, very tragically, from the time of Pesach through Lag BaOmer, all of his Talmidim, 24,000 Talmidim, it's brought down 12,000 sets of Chavrusa, so 24,000 Talmidim were all died during this time, like one by one by one, just all 24,000 were died during this time. And if you look at source number one, the source of this, the Medrash Rabbah, it says, Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 disciples from Gabas to Antipatris and all died at the same period. Why? Because they looked grudgingly on each other. Okay, so we know that all of them, all 12,000 Chavrusas, 24,000 Talmidim died, and we know the reason, Shalom, Nohagu, Kavod, Zubazu. They did not show respect one onto the other. Just think about for a second what it must have been like for Rabbi Akiva during this time. As we know, a Rebbe is like a father, his Talmidim are like his children. He taught them like they were his children, and then one by one, they just all died, and it was just like the most tragic time for the entire generation, what was going on here. So that's one reason what Lag BaOmer is about, that on Lag BaOmer is the day that these 24,000 students stop dying, okay? Doesn't sound very celebratory to me, right? When someone stops dying, you usually have a time period where you're mourning. You usually have a time period where you're still feeling the loss. It's not like they stopped dying, so now let's party. You know, we could go on with life. It doesn't seem natural that a day of Lag BaOmer, the day that commemorates the end of these 24,000 students dying, should be a day for celebration. So that's a little bit confusing. The other thing that Lag BaOmer celebrates and commemorates is the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So as we know, the Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, we all know about him, Meiron, big Tzaddik, he made so many chidushim, he was just an incredible gadol of his time, and all of his sfarim and everything that he developed during his time, still we learn today, and we grow so much from till this day. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was a huge tzaddik, and we know that because if one visits his kever in Meiron, it's just a very, you know, we just have always heard about him, songs made up about him, and the spirit of Lag BaOmer is all about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. So again, a yahrzeit of Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, a yahrzeit, we commemorate it. We don't have it like a fast day, but it's usually a somber day, a serious day. We kind of, you know, talk about who died, and you know, we make it like a day where we could grow and learn. We don't usually do it by like having field day and running around parks and being pyromaniacs. I'm saying like usually we will celebrate a yahrzeit by having like a calm, a nice suda, but it's typically like a serious occasion. So it's a little bit perplexing why the two things so far that we understand about Lag BaOmer, the 24,000 students stopped dying, and Rav Shimon Bar Yochai's yahrzeit, are both, to me, sad occasions, and yet we commemorate them in a happy way, and it is supposed to be a joyous day. So let's delve into that a little bit and understand why we're celebrating. So if you look at the end of it, We understand that at the end of Midrash Rabbah, we understand that after this happened, and the 12,000 Chavrusa, it says that the 24,000 students died, it says eventually he raised 7 disciples. Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua, Rabbi Yochanan the Cobbler, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And then there are other opinions about other Talmidim that there were the 7. And it says, said he, my sons, the previous ones died only because they grudged each other the knowledge of the Torah. See to it that you do not act thus. They therefore arose and filled the whole of Eretz Yisrael with Torah. So one thing that happened from what happened then, from the 24,000 students dying, is that Rabbi Akiva started a new generation. He now has 7 new Talmidim. These 7 Talmidim started a whole new time period of growth, of incredible Torah learning, but Torah learning that did not have the same spirit as the last 24,000 Talmidim. These 7, who obviously is a much smaller number than 24,000, but through these 7 came a whole new spirit of Torah. It wasn't just the learning of Torah, where there wasn't respect, and there wasn't the kind of characteristics that should come out of learning Torah, as we know from our Torah Academy logo. We learn Torah, we live Torah, right? Where Torah is learned and Torah is lived. It's not enough to learn Torah, we have to live Torah. They were not demonstrating that characteristic. They were learning Torah, but they weren't living it. These 7 Talmidim, who then started this next generation of learning through Rabbi Akiva, they symbolized a whole new time of not just learning Torah, but living Torah and spreading that Torah around to the whole world during that time. And they were incredible, incredible leaders. And till today, they're big, the leaders that we learn from through the Gemara and other sources. So the celebration on that day, obviously we're not celebrating them dying, but we're celebrating them stopping to die, because now we're ushering in a new time, a new generation of Talmidim who really got it, who understood what it means to learn Torah and what it means to teach Torah in the appropriate way. And it's still strange, though, because it's still a yard site for Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So how do we understand the fact that we're still celebrating on such a tzaddik yard site who we're so sad to have lost? So if you go into the second source, the Book of Our Heritage, Sefer Todah, it says, it's an ancient tradition that the demise of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai occurred on the 33rd day of the Omer. And the day of his demise was filled with a great light of endless joy through the secret wisdom which we revealed to disciples that day. That day, you revealed some amazing secrets, some amazing Kabbalah, and it was so rejoiced because it was such a special, learning a piece of Torah that it was celebrated so much, and which were written down in the Zohar. That day was to him and his disciples like the day in which a groom rejoices under his chuppah. Tradition relates that its sun had not set till he had revealed all that he had been permitted to reveal, whereupon the sunset and his soul ascended on high. For this reason, the day is marked by rejoicing through the day of the death of the righteous and the day of her fasting. Usually the day of the righteous, like we know that on Moshe's yard site, the Chevar Kadisha fasts, because he wasn't buried by the Chevar Kadisha, there's a whole reason behind it, but people fast for it because he was just tzaddik that we lost. Right here, Rosh Hashanah and Bar Yochai were celebrating, so he told us, he gave strict instructions, kind of wrote it in his will. He said he doesn't want anyone fasting, doesn't want anyone being upset and miserable. He wants everyone rejoicing. He wants them not reliving and being sad about his death. He wants everyone celebrating his life. That was his request. That was his wish. That was his last will and testament. He felt that there was light during his time. He was mechadish chedushim. His talmidim revered him so much and learned so much from him. And he said, "Please don't remember me in a sad way. Remember me in a positive way. Remember me as your rebbe, and remember me with a smile and rejoice for all that we learned together and for all that we taught and were able to do together." So that's something that he requested, and his talmidim obeyed. They're very loyal. And they said, what a wonderful way to commemorate and to celebrate our Rebbe. Let's do it with a celebration, with something joyous and not in a sad way. So because of both these reasons, A, that we know they stopped dying and a new generation began, and because Rosh Hashanah Baruch Hu wanted us to celebrate his life, we now commemorate Lag BaOmer with festivities, with bonfires and parties, with haircuts, with music, and the Omer, the mourning period of the Omer is not done, as we know it goes through till Shavuos, but the mourning period, the first 33 days of the mourning period are officially done at that point. There's a third lesser known reason behind the day of Lag BaOmer. The Chassam Sofer says that it's the day the man started falling in the desert. Which is interesting. So what's the significance of that? And how do these three reasons coincide? How do they connect to each other? So before we understand this, we need to understand the whole concept of Sfira better. Sfira Sa'omer has two components to it. The first component, literally, is that it's a time period between Pesach and Shavuos. It's a time period between the Jews leaving Mitzrayim till us receiving the Torah on Har Sinai. And it's a time of a national birth. It's really when the Jewish people became a nation, and when we got ourselves prepared to receive the Torah. How do we prepare ourselves till this day? Is the second component to Sefirah, which is the Midot system. As we know, every day, every week, and then every day within the week, there are special character traits that we're supposed to improve upon. This is not supposed to be just let's count Sefirah and go on with our day. This is supposed to be let's count Sefirah and internalize some kind of lesson to make us better people. Whether that's because we need to be mitaken for what the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva did not do during that time, or they were not respectful towards each other and they didn't have these character traits that we aspire to, or just because in order to receive the Torah and be able to, you know, be makabel all the mitzvot we're going to get, we have to be the right type of people. We have to make sure that we become Torah personalities. How do we do that? By improving on our midos, by making sure that our character traits are impeccable. And every day in this time period, there's a different midah, different character traits to focus on, and make sure that we're working on it and we're doing something we can to improve upon ourselves. So the first week, I have it in source number 3, the Sefiros. The first week is Chesed, loving kindness. The second week is Gvura, which is justice, discipline. The third week is Teferes, beauty. The fourth week is Netzach, endurance. The fifth week is Hod. We're going to get back to that. And it's majesty, glory. The sixth week is Yesod, strength. And the seventh week is Malchus, which makes sense because we're leading up to Hashem becoming our king and our ruler and, you know, getting the Torah. So those are the 7 weeks, the 49 days of Sefira. Each week has its own character trait, and then within each week, every day has its own more detailed character trait. And there are a lot of people who really use this time. You know, there's some very nice books that have been written, calendars that on every day has a very nice, beautiful Musar idea or something that we can learn from that day. And it's important for us to try as best as we can to utilize this time to work on our midos. And each day that we're doing that, we're really actively bringing ourselves up to the level where we could receive the Torah. So according to the Midos cycle, the day of Lag BaOmer is known as Hod Sheba Hod. We typically translate the word Hod to mean glory, Hashem's greatness, right? And we usually say that's Hashem's glory and that's His greatness and that's what, you know, we look up to. You can't get over the miracles Hashem performs, how great He is, and that's what Hod means. But what's interesting is that there's another meaning of Hod. Hod is a shoresh of Todah. Right? Hod is a shoresh of being thankful. And when we look, there's a connection, because when we look up to Hashem's greatness and we see the miracles He performs, it right away brings us to appreciation of His greatness and all He does for us. After the Jews left Egypt, after they left Mitzrayim and they saw the miracles in the Yam Suf, what's the first thing they did? They thanked Hashem. They sang Shirat Hashem, you know, Ashir Hashem, become all alive. We can't believe the miracles You brought us. We are grateful to You. After the war with Sisera, the first thing Devorah did is Shirat Devorah. She sang her song to Hashem to thank Hashem for the miracles that He performed on her behalf. After the major miracles and events in our lives, you know, we turn to Hashem. And we know that during difficult times, we turn to Hashem. Often, we don't always turn to Hashem when things are just, they're good, like they're just going smoothly, you know, not any outward miracle and not any like disaster that we need to pray, but we just sometimes neglect that. So if you look in source number 4, Gemara Sanhedrin, we hear about someone who unfortunately did not have this characteristic of being grateful to Hashem even after miracles. B'kesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asos Chizkiyahu Mashiach. After Chizkiyahu's big war with Sancheirev, where he, it was like an amazing miracle that he fought and he won. Hashem decided this is a great time, we're in a good place, let's bring Mashiach. It's a time to usher in the era of Mashiach, right? So he said, where are we about Chizkiyahu Mashiach? The Sancheirev Gog U'Magog. I'm ready to make Chizkiyahu Mashiach, and I'm ready to make Sancheirev the war of Gog U'Magog. As we know, before Mashiach comes, there's going to be a war of Gog U'Magog, which is going to bring in Mashiach. It's supposed to be the worst war ever, and it's going to bring a lot of destruction, but we know that that's going to lead into a time of Mashiach. So Hashem said, now's the time. Chizkiyahu will be Mashiach. The war of Gog U'Magog will be his war of Sancheirev. I'm ready. Let's go. So Amra Miras Hadin Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the divine attribute of justice said before Hashem, Ribono shel Olam, Mamad David Melch Yisrael Shamar Kamashios Shvachos Lepanecha Loasiso Mashiach. Hashem, I don't get it. David HaMelech, who was the author of all of the Shira to Hashem, the Tehillim, and all of the poetry and the songs, and he always was so grateful and thanking Hashem and acknowledging Hashem for everything. He didn't make Mashiach. The Chizkiyahu she'asisa lo kol hanisim halalu v'lo amar shira lefanecha ta'aseyu Mashiach. And Chizkiyahu, you made all these outward miracles. Look what you did for him. You gave him the most incredible victory. He didn't say Shira. He didn't say thank you. He didn't sing to you and acknowledge you. And him you're going to make Mashiach. And thereupon, Hashem relented and did not bring about the Messianic era. Hashem, you know, acknowledged what the Midas HaDin said and realized that that's true. You know, he didn't have that quality. That quality is very important. And it's not the time for Mashiach. Mashiach has to have that quality. So very often, you know, we turn to Hashem during difficult times. You know, someone's sick, a Tehillim rally, there's terrorism in Israel, whatever it is, we're right there. Hashem, help! You know, I need your Yeshua, I need something, I can't. You know, we're right in there with the Tehillim. But what happens when things are going smoothly? You know, forget the outward miracles. Obviously, if something miraculous happens, we're grateful to Hashem. But what about everyday life? What about when things are going well, when things are going smoothly? Do we always think to thank Hashem? Do we always know that we have to right away turn to Hashem and acknowledge that it comes from Him? Is that coming naturally to us? And that's something we have to always ask ourselves. And it's something that's a very, I happen to love this Gemara in Pesachim. It's just a very beautiful imagery, and I want to read it together with you. So if you look at source number 5, it's just another idea of how Mashiach has to have this trait, how the leader of the Jewish people has to have this midah of Hakaras HaTov, of giving thanks. So, Asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'aso Suda L'Tzadikim. In the future, Hashem is going to make a Suda, a feast, for the great people, for the Tzadikim. The Yom Sheik Mocha still is Zarah Shah Yitzhak, on the day that he bestows his kindness upon the children of Yitzhak. Lachar Shah, Limbisho Sin, Nos Nimno, La Abma Vinu Koshal, Brachel of Arech. After they eat and they fill themselves and they're all ready to bench, Hashem gives the cup, they give the cup of wine to Avram Avinu, they say, Avram, nu, you bench, right? The Vomer Lehen Tol Varech, you bench. And what does Avram say to them? Einim Varech Sheyatzai Men Yishmael. He says, I can't bench, I can't be the one to bench because I gave birth to Yishmael. As we know, Yishmael was not the greatest of tzaddikim, and he felt that he wasn't worthy of benching, so let's pass it on. So, Omer Lel Yitzchak, they say then to Yitzchak, nu, Tol Varech, take the cup and bench for us. Vomer Lehen Einim Varech Sheyatzai Men Yishmael. I can't bench, I can't possibly the one to represent this table of tzaddikim. I gave birth, I had Esav. We know Esav was a Russia. There's no way. So, nu, let's move on. Amar lo Yaakov, tol varech, let's move on to Yaakov. Yaakov, please bench for us. Just, you know. So what does Yaakov say? Eini varech she nasasi shtei achayos bechayehen. I can't bench because I married two sisters in their lifetimes. Shasida tola lasvan alai. And in the future, we know the Torah is going to forbid that marriage. It's not going to be okay. I'm not the one to represent all of us. I didn't do the best of things. It's not me. It can't be me. Let's move on. Okay. Omer Lala Moshe. Tol Varech. Moshe, please. Take the cup and bench. Right? We're getting impatient now. Omer Lahen. Moshe answers, Eini Varech Shelo Zachis L'Kanes L'Eretz Yisrael. Lo B'Chayai V'Lo B'Mosai. He says, I can't bench. I wasn't Zocha to enter Eretz Yisrael. Not in my lifetime and not in my death. I can't be the one to bench. It's not going to be me. Next, Omer Lel Yoshua. They said, Yoshua, Tol Varech, take the cup and bench. Omer Lehen, Yoshua will say, Eini Varech, Shelo Zachisi L'Ben. I cannot bench because I didn't have a son. So he thinks that he's not Zochel, though I think having daughters is really great. So I don't know if I agree with that one so much, but okay, you know, they know better. Omer Lel David, he'll then say to David, Tol Varech, take the cup and bench. And David will say to them, Ani Avarech. Shine, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bench. Velina el avarech. And for me, it's fitting to bench. Shneamar kos Yeshua's esa b'shem Hashem ekra. He quotes himself, because we know David wrote that pasuk, and he says, I should bench, because I lift up a cup, and raise my cup, because Hashem brings Yeshua, and I thank Hashem. In the name of Hashem, I will invoke Hashem's name. When Yeshua comes, I raise my cup, and I thank Hashem. I will take this. I will bench, because I know that I have that characteristic. So, and I guess they all agreed with that and went with it, right? So in this Gemara, it's very clear, and the previous one, that a characteristic that is so crucial and so important is that characteristic of thinking, of being grateful to God, of acknowledging Hashem, of being aware of the Ribono Shel Olam, of His interaction in our lives, of everything He does for us on a regular basis. David was the master at that. That's why it's Mashiach ben David. David does ultimately descend from Mashiach because he really characterized that midah of always acknowledging and being grateful to Hashem. So the midah of hod, this mitzvah of giving thanks, this hod sheba hod that is so present, and we're going to learn about how it connects to Lag BaOmer, that we need to always tap into on Lag BaOmer and every day really, is about always acknowledging Hashem. That it's important in our relationship with Hashem for sure, but the truth is that the more we demonstrate that with Hashem, the more it will come into play in all of our relationships in our lives. And as we know, anytime we're grateful to people, anytime we interact and are appreciative and show hakaras hatov, it only brings us closer to people. It only makes our relationship stronger. When we constantly grunt and criticize, ugh, you came home late again today, to our husbands, right? What about the times that he came home on time? Do we say, thank you so much for coming on time today? Or, you didn't take out the garbage again. We're very quick to say that. How often are we saying, thank you for taking the garbage out? I didn't ask you this time, and you did it on your own. I appreciate that. Right? So if you look at page number 3 in the booklet, I put in an article, because I always like to bring in some therapy kind of stuff. Because in today's day and age, we need it. Marriages are really suffering, and I think it's always important to bring in different tips of what we could do to always improve. And since we're talking about gratitude tonight, I figured let's talk about gratitude in our relationships and our lives. So I'm not going to read the whole article. If you want to take it home and read it on your own, this is from an article in 2012, an article called Resolution, Not Conflict. Does gratitude matter in marriage? So what does gratitude mean? Gratitude is the quality of being thankful, the readiness to show appreciation for and return kindness. As children, we're taught to say thank you automatically in return for a favor, right? On the surface level, we are taught that gratitude is an appropriate social response. What do you say, kids? Thank you, right? Toda rabba. Like, we always are very quick to make sure our kids, do they really understand what they're doing? No. Obviously, it's important to, you know, make sure that they're getting it and get it in their heads that they have to constantly be thankful and say thank you, but they don't really understand. On the same time, on a more complex level, gratitude is a spiritual way of being. When we truly feel gratitude, we experience heartfelt awe and appreciation for the goodness of something outside ourselves. Having gratitude towards someone or something means respecting its value and treasuring how unique, beautiful, or indispensable it is. Right? We realize that we need it, and it's good for us. It helps us. It helps us in our lives. Gratitude is a tool for us to acknowledge and appreciate when someone does something kind for us. We need it. It adds value to our lives. New studies support the idea that gratitude is an integral part of healthy relationships. As marriages move past the honeymoon stage, couples go from appreciating and loving every little detail about each other to taking each other for granted. That's completely natural, and it often happens to those who are closest to us. We're so nice to our friends. I mean, we're so nice to our friends, right? Our friends are, you know, we don't see them as often, we don't live with them. Thank you so much. Thanks for getting that for me. Thanks for that. Our husbands, our children, our parents, are we so quick to be so nice? Thank you. So nice of you. It's definitely harder because we're more conditioned to just treating them like, you know, they're just around us. They're just there. You know, we don't really appreciate them as much because we just come to expect it. It becomes part of daily life. It's something that's in our lives. They have to do this for us. They have to be there for us. It's a part of our marriage. It's part of me being their parents. It's part of me being their child. I come to expect it. It's regular, everyday life. Right? When someone different does it, it's very nice and we appreciate it. It's very hard to show that same level of appreciation and acknowledge the action as much when it's someone who we feel so close to and we are with day to day, you know, every day living among them. We move on to the fourth paragraph. Dr. Gordon's study in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology explores the role of gratitude and appreciation in maintaining long and healthy relationships. In the study, 50 committed couples were given a week to fill out appreciation journals. On days when one partner reported feeling more appreciated, he or she tend to appreciate his or her partner more the next day. Right? And it goes both ways. Because as we know, when you give, you also receive. So when you give compliments or when you are grateful and you show appreciation, the other person feels closer to you too. So it really is very helpful in a relationship to not just be the one who receives the appreciation and makes you feel great, but when you give it over, it makes you feel great too. Because it makes you more connected. It makes you feel like it's a give and take. You do. He does. You feel close. It's a wonderful feeling. And it's so important to constantly be working on this. At the end, the last paragraph, the key to sparking healthy relationships with gratitude is to take the initiative. Instead of just waiting for the other person to make you feel good, you can jumpstart that cycle and take it into your own hands by focusing on what's good in your relationship, says Dr. Gordon. Start with small and easily achievable goals, such as giving your spouse 5 compliments a day or simply smiling at him or her more often. Gratitude is a skill that you cultivate. Nurture it in yourself, and soon you'll see positivity radiate back at you. I've heard from so many places that for every 1 criticism, make sure there are 5 compliments, you know? For every 1 negative interaction, make sure there are 5 positive ones. Make sure that it's not just that it's like, you know, constant, you know, do this, I always do this, you know, that's negativity. You have to make sure that that's in addition to positive interactions. And that positive interaction, when it's about gratitude, it's about showing appreciation, that could go a very long way. It's something that means a lot to the person who's hearing it. It makes them feel valued. It makes them feel feel like they want to do it again, you know, I'm saying it's the best thing you can do for yourself, really, because if you're showing appreciation, they'll say, oh, you know, she really needs this and appreciates it. Hey, I'm going to try that again. I'm going to do that for her. I'll bring her breakfast in bed once in a while. I'll let her go out and get a manicure. You know, like those things will come more because he sees that you need it and you appreciate it. So that's not the point of the shiur, but I think it's helpful for every spouse, for every spouses and parents and children and every relationship we're in. When you give and when you do and when you then show appreciation when someone does for you, it's just a great way to maintain a healthy relationship. It just makes things solid and makes things two-sided and it's just a good feeling and it really helps a relationship. And of course, we need to have it when it comes to our relationship with Hashem. So if you go into source number 6, go back a page, sorry. What tefillah really emphasizes this the most in Shemona Esrei. I personally, I think Shemona Esrei is the most meaningful tefillah in the Siddur. I really, it really, you know, speaks to me. So many of the bakashos, you know, the refuah, and, you know, so many of the tefillahs of Bnei Yerushalayim, and, you know, there's so much in there that really speaks to me. But the part of Shemona Esrei that I really feel the most is when I'm saying modim. I mean, modim, it's like if I ever get distracted, like modim, boom, like I'm back, you know? Like, I just, modim has an effect on me because I feel like that's the point where we could just think about all of the good that we have in our lives. And we all, even though there is bad, we all have some good. And we have to realize, like, when we say modim, it's powerful. Say modim, Hashem, thank you. And not only is modim, the shorish of modim, hod, which means thank you, but the Hebrew word lehodos, is means to acknowledge. When you are acknowledging something, you are thanking them, right? You're thanking them because you acknowledge it comes from them. Thank you for getting that from me. I'm acknowledging that you just got that for me. So it's all like kind of the same thing. So when we're doing Mozim Anachnu Lach Hashem Elokeinu, we are acknowledging Hashem that you are doing all of this for us. You do so much for us. You wake us up in the morning. You get us through our days. You know, there's so much you do for us, Modim. You're acknowledging all you do, and we thank you. So in the Art of Jewish Prayer, Kirzner writes very beautifully, the Hebrew word for thanksgiving is hoda'ah. This word also means to admit or to acknowledge. Rabbi Hutner said that every expression of thanks that one person gives to another is really a form of admitting. Okay, so I just paraphrased it. All right. People sometimes have difficulty saying thank you to another person because it implies that the first person needed the second one. People who are very arrogant don't want to admit that they need something from someone else. Thus, thanking someone is related to the idea of admitting something. In the Modim prayer, we admit that we need Hashem and that we appreciate everything He gives us. It is much easier for us to believe that we independently accomplish and provide everything we have, rather than it is to give credit to Hashem. I mean, again, that goes for every relationship. You know, you want to feel like you're doing it. Kol tivo sim yadia, sachayel hazeh. And I'm sure that was going on in Chizkiyahu's mind also. You know, I won this war. I was strong. I worked out. I did it, you know. And sometimes when you're wrapped up in what you're doing and who you are and you could do it and you're great, you sometimes forget that you didn't do this alone, you know. There was someone who really helped you along. There was a higher being that helped you along the way. And by being grateful and by thanking, you're also acknowledging that you're dependent on Hashem, on your husband, on your father, whatever it is, you're dependent on them, and only because of them are you at this point. Did you have what you needed? And you're so appreciative for that. So that acknowledgement is the first step. When you acknowledge you got something, you acknowledge there's something you needed that was lacking and it was filled, then you could properly think, because you know that you needed that, and you're so appreciative for what you got. So that's the idea of modim. And the same thing with moda'ani. When you're waking up the first thing in the morning, moda'ani asher ad moda'ani lefanecha, I'm acknowledging to you, thank you for waking me up. You know, this is awesome. Another day, another new beginning, another daylight. Thank you for waking me up. Thank you for bringing me into this new day. So those tefillos are really very meaningful, I find. The modim and the moda'ani, the idea of really directly, so directly, telling Hashem, thank you. We really appreciate everything you do for us. Okay. Another beautiful idea about this hod is what's the shoresh of Yehudim, what we're called universally, is hod, right? We weren't named Yosefim. We weren't named, you know, any other Mosheim. I'm saying we're named Yehudim. We're named after Yehuda. And Yehuda showed appreciation to Tamar, tzedakah mimeni. Yehuda realized, he acknowledged that he was wrong and Tamar was right and she did the right thing. And by saying that, he appreciated her actions. And again, it ushered in Mashiach, because we know that Mashiach comes from their union. And what's very interesting is that the root of Yehudim, Hod, Todah means that as Yehudim, as Jewish people, the characteristic that should be so glaringly obvious, it should be so part of us, is that attribute of thank you, of acknowledging, of being appreciative, of being grateful people. Because when you're a grateful person, it makes you humble. And it makes you just a better person. It's a good feeling. It's good for you to humble yourself sometimes and acknowledge and thank. So that's really, that's who we are. We're Yehudim. We're full of thanks. We're full of acknowledgement that we can't do it alone. We need the help of others. We need the help of Hashem. And that's what makes us, why we are called Yehudim. So how does this apply to Sfira and to Lag BaOmer in particular? So we know that the Sfira period is a little bit of a bumpy time. First we have, you know, we're slaves in Egypt, and then we encounter freedom, and we go out of it. Then we come back into the desert, which is a little bit of a tough time for the Jewish people. And then later, generations later, we know that we had this Talmidim who died, and we lost a big tzaddik, Shimon Bar Yochai, and that was all Lag BaOmer. And then we move on back into Sfira, and then we go into Shavuos, Matan Torah, the greatest, you know, time of our lives. So it's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of bumps in the road, you know, good and bad, everything mixed in between. It's a tough time period where it's a little bit confusing. And I think that this very much, this time period really symbolizes what we're speaking about. Because during those ups and during those downs, during the miracle from, you know, Hashem of taking us out of Mitzrayim, down to the Talmidim dying, which they, you know, Rabbi Akiva was able to get to the level of acknowledging that it was for the best. All of this time and in between, we have to always acknowledge that no matter what's happening, whether it's good, bad, it's all good for us. And it's all what Hashem wants for us ultimately, and we have to appreciate and be grateful for it. And again, that's really the theme of what's going on during this time period. During the ups, during the downs, during all the time in between, we always have to realize that no matter what's happening, it's really all coming from Hashem, and we have to be grateful for it. You just go to number 7, to source number 7. We learned about, I spoke to you before, the third reason of the day of Lag BaOmer, about how the day of Lag BaOmer also is the day when the generation of the Midbar first got the Mun. So how does this tie into this? What's the Mun about? So in Maseches Yoma, it explains a little bit about why it connects to what we were talking about. So Shalu Talmida, that's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, happens to be that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was asked this question. Mepnei ma lo yirad lehem liYisrael man pa'amachas. It's a great question. Hashem already is performing miracles with the Mun, right? We know the Mun tasted like anything he wanted it, and the way it came, fell from the sky, and the whole thing was a miracle. So why couldn't Hashem make the ultimate miracle and have the Mun fall one time a year, where it filled you up for the year, you were done, you were able to store it in your home, and just feel to be home and eat from your Mun and have it there available to you whenever you wanted it, and it would be great, right? Why was it that Hashem made it happen every day? Right? Why couldn't he just make a miracle of it once a year? So Amar lahem, he says to them, I'm sholachem mashal. I'm going to give you a mashal. L'ma ha-davar zomeh, what this is similar to. L'melech basar adam she'esh lo ben achad. It's like a king who had one son. Pasach lo mezonosav pa'am achas b'shana. In the past, the king would allocate the money, the allowance to his son one time a year. Lo haya makbil pnei aviv ela pa'am achas. So what would happen? He would not see his father only once a year. He would come once a year, get his money, go where he was the rest of the year, come back again once a year, get his money, leave again once a year. The king would see his son once a year, because that's when he would hand over his money. Right? Eventually the king arose and said, you know, this is enough. I'm going to stop it once a year, and I'm going to start doing it b'chol yom. I'm going to make you get it every single day. That every day I'm going to give you I'm going to chop up your yearly allowance into every day little portions, and you are going to now have to come to me every day to get your allowance. Right? Okay, so that's how he started to do it. That he came to his father every day, and that's how he was able to have more interactions with him. So it's the same thing here, right? One who had 4 or 5 children, he would worry and he would say, Shema lo yared man lamachar, perhaps the man will not fall tomorrow, right? And b'nimsa'u kula meisim barab, and it will be found that all of us will die of starvation. As a result of this worry, as a result of this panic, right? It was like 12 o'clock, oh my God, there's no man, what are we going to do, right? They would cry out to Hashem and beg him every day with such kavana, please, Hashem, feed me, make sure that we get our mun. So as opposed to falling one time a year, where that's the one time a year we'll turn to Hashem, you know, where the king, you know, saw his son, Hashem wants to see us more often. He wants us to come to him and daven to him and be connected to him more often. often. How did he do that? By making sure to get the mud every day. If he fell every day, then he'd be sure they would hear from us more often. And that's what Hashem did. But that required a lot of emunah. It required a lot of bitachon. And the people of the generation of the Midbar, we know that it was very difficult in Mitzrayim. They really felt the lowest level. They were beaten. They were battered. They worked so hard. Their souls left them. They were beaten people. They weren't the same. And when they had to come out of Mitzrayim, they then saw those miracles, which were great, but then they reached the Midbar. I mean, you can just imagine what it must have been like for them during that time. So this was another hassle now to get through, that every day they had to wait for the month to fall, make sure that Hashem was bringing it. They didn't have it saved in their home. They could like constantly take little from. They had to always wait for it every day to come. But that made them turn to Hashem. And they were totally reliant on Hashem. They had to depend on Hashem for everything. And that was very good for them. They needed that because that made sure that they had a connection to Hashem. Hold on, I lost something. Okay. Okay, so now we can understand a little bit of how all of these things connect. Because we know the story behind Rav Shimon bar Yochai is actually very interesting. Rav Shimon bar Yochai was a tzaddik of his generation, but he had a lot of negative things to say about the government during that time. And unfortunately, the government got wind of some negative remarks he made about them, and they sent their soldiers out to hunt down Rav Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai had to run for his life, and what did he do? He found a cave, and he hid in it with his son for 14 years. Not an easy life. I mean, in those 14 years, he was mechadesh many chidushim, and there was a lot that came out of that time in his hidden cave. But it was a very difficult time for him where he had to completely rely on Hashem. He had nothing. He had no food stored in there. He had to rely on a plant growing outside of his cave that produced a berry, or an animal running by that he could shecht and eat with his son. He had literally had nothing. And his whole existence during those 14 years was completely relying on Hashem. And again, this is another example of how someone had to come to that level of hod, of being grateful, because he literally could not manage on his own. He was given this difficult, this very difficult challenge because Hashem wanted him close, and Hashem wanted him davening, and Hashem wanted him to make sure to focus on him and on tefillah. And the same thing with the Ochlei HaMan, the people who were in the generation of the Midbar. Until they started eating the man, until they started having to depend on Hashem every day, they weren't ready for Matan Torah, and they weren't ready to receive the Torah in which they were dependent and reliant on Hashem. And when you're reliant, and when you need that that strength, and you need what Hashem is giving, then it really makes you acknowledge and thank Hashem a lot more. Now, of course, we don't live in a desert. We don't live in a cave. We have to kind of make this for ourselves and realize that we still need it just as much as people who are in difficult situations do. And we have to make sure that every day we are turning to Hashem. So a lot of this idea of Lag BaOmer is really about tefillah, about enhancing our tefillah, about davening and focusing on our relationship with Hashem and on our connection. And when we think about when we were children and we were, told to draw a symbol of Lag BaOmer, we always thought about the bow and arrow, right? The bow and arrow. So I always thought the bow and arrow was about it's part of field day, You're running in the park in the fields, and you have your bow and arrow, and that's what people played with, I guess, years ago, and it kind of was a staple, kind of like the dreidel on Hanukkah was the toy they played with during that time. So that's what I always thought the bow and arrow was about. But apparently, the Sfarim brings down the bow and arrow has a different meaning. The bow is the same shape as a rainbow, a keshes, and the rainbow did not come out at all during all of Rav Shimon bar Yochai's life. His whole time period that he was alive, there was no rainbow. And as we know, the rainbow is there to remind us that Hashem brought a flood once, and he might destroy us again. But the reason why the keshes, the rainbow, was not there was because they had a terrific level of emunah. They didn't need any a reminder of that. And that was one meaning of the bow and arrow. But another beautiful idea about the significance behind the bow and arrow is, again, a connection to prayer. When we think about how you use the bow and arrow, you pull it back, pull it towards your heart, and then it shoots towards this destination, towards the bullseye. When we daven to Hashem, and we really pull at our heartstrings, and we use all of our heart and soul to daven and have kavana and really make it a beautiful, meaningful davening, we pull back into ourselves, we know that that arrow, that tefillah, is going to shoot straight to Hashem. That tefillah is so meaningful to Hashem because it came from our heart and soul, from the depths of us. And if you look at the word keshes, kuf, shin, saf, it's the same first letters as Shema, kol, tefillah, seinu. that the words of our tefillos, the voices, our voices will be heard in prayer because we're doing it with that strength and with that ability to really make sure that it reaches Hashem. On Lag BaOmer specifically, Hashem is yearning to hear our tefillos. He's waiting to hear from us. It's Hod Shebahod. We're supposed to show our acknowledgement, our thank you. Hashem's waiting to hear those tefillos that are full of kavana and full of really our heart and soul into it. Rabbanit Imi Mizrahi gave over a beautiful idea. It's actually a beautiful imagery that really relates to this and it resonated with me. She said that one of the purposes, another symbol of Lag BaOmer is the bonfire. You know, all of our pyromaniac kids and husbands, they have the best time and it's a little scary, but they have a great time, so let them enjoy. So she was explaining how the bonfire, the symbol of it is to represent the fire in our souls and how tefillah can stir up that fire and make it stronger. V'isha Yisrael tefillah san be'avas kabel baratzom. We say it every day. V'isha Yisrael. What does that mean? So that V'isha Yisrael, according to Rosh Hashanah Vayochai, again another Dvar Torah from Rosh Hashanah Vayochai, is that Hashem accepts your tefillos according to the stirrings of your soul, according to the fire burning in you. V'isha Yisrael tefillah san be'avas kabel baratzom. The fire, according to the strength of your fire, is how your tefillah will be answered by Hashem. The more you put into it, the more that you get those fire, those flames going, the more that you poke with the, throw wood in and put the, whatever they do, to get the fire going, the more that you put into that fire, the more the flames will grow, the more your kavana is, the more Hashem, tefillos will reach Hashem, the more it will, the more kavana you'll have, the more fire you're showing. And according to that fire is really how much Hashem will hear you and how much it will resonate. When we start Shmona Esra every day, we say Hashem Sfasai Tetzach Ufi Agitil Asecha. Right? The first two letters, Adoshem Sfasai, this is another beautiful idea that she shared, spells out Eish. That we're asking Hashem, please help us ignite our fire. Help us get to the point where we have that kavana, we have those right intentions, we're really focused, we're really feeling it. You know, we all know a good davening versus an amazing davening. We woke out of Ne'ilah of Yom Kippur and we know that we hit the jackpot. I mean, that was just amazing. But we have to feel that every day. You know, it's very hard to find time to daven. And we have every excuse in the book. I'm busy with the kids. I have to go shopping. I have to cook for Shabbos. I work. And they're all legitimate. You know, they're all legitimate reasons, legitimate excuses. And it's very hard to go every day to find time to daven. But when we find that time to daven, and even if it's only Shemoneh Esrei we get to say, or whatever it is, even if we bench that day, or even if we say a bracha with kavana, or we find time for mincha, whatever it is, whatever time we find to speak to Hashem through our day, if we're saying it with that kavana, with that meaning, with our heart and soul, and giving all of ourselves into it, it will go straight to Hashem like that arrow. It will reach Hashem so strong. It will be like the fires inside of us, stirring our neshamas and really getting us going. That's so important. That's what Hashem wants from us. He doesn't want you to say the words. He wants to know that we mean it. That we're really in our tefillos. We have bakasha and we have hoda'ah and we have everything that needs to be in there to make it a well-rounded tefillah. You know, to make it a real purposeful, meaningful connection to Hashem. When we daven, when you think about the verb of tefillah, lehispalel. Right? Lispalel is a hispael. It's like you're doing it to yourself. That's the kind of verb it is. It's not for Hashem. Hashem does not need our tefillos. It doesn't make him better. It doesn't improve in him. It doesn't, he's not sitting there waiting. He doesn't need it. We need it. Tefillah changes us. When we have that connection, when we're acknowledging that everything that comes to us, everything that we have is coming from Hashem, that changes us. That has an impact on us. And that's what tefillah is supposed to be about. Tefillah is supposed to get us inspired in how much we could be proud of who we are and how much more we can do. It should inspire us to always make us better people. It should inspire us in our relationships with all of our people around us and especially in our relationship with Hashem. And that's really what tefillah is supposed to be about. There's a poem on the last page that I had hanging in my room when I was post-seminary, and it always inspired me. It's not a Jewish author, but I think it very much relates. I'm sure some of you might have seen it. It's called Take Time to Pray. I got up early one morning and rushed right into the day. I had so much to accomplish, I didn't have time to pray. Troubles just tumbled about me, and heavier came each task. Why doesn't God help me, I wondered. He answered, you didn't ask. I tried to come into God's presence. I used all my keys at the lock. God gently and lovingly chided, why, child, you didn't knock. I wanted to see joy and beauty, but the day toiled on gray and bleak. I wondered why God didn't show me. He said, you didn't seek. I woke up early this morning and paused before entering the day. I had so much to accomplish that I had to take time to pray. I love that because I think that it really is the point. So what do we learn about all of this? What is Lag BaOmer? What's Sphere? What's this all about? So we know that Sphere is about improving our midos. And we know that what happens on Lag BaOmer is all of those Talmidim who died, but we rejoice because it's a new beginning of Talmidim who understood what it meant to have good midos, to respect one another. We also know that Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai, who was a tzaddik, he died on that day, so why are we celebrating it? We're celebrating it because that was his will. That's what he wanted from us, to celebrate his life, to rejoice in his teachings. And the third thing that happened was that the Jews started getting the man in the Midbar. What's significant about that? Because it taught us what it means to have bitachon. It taught us what it means to rely solely on Hashem. Just like Rosh Shimon Bar Yochai lived part of his life in a cave for 14 years and had to rely solely on Hashem, and he turned to Hashem in tefillah, we know that that's our goal. As Jews, as Yehudim, we have to be full of todah, full of hoda'ah. We have to always acknowledge and always realize that the thanks have to be in us. We always have to appreciate, always have to find time to pray, always find time to connect to Hashem, who really is responsible for everything we have. And through us improving on this midah, on this Lag BaOmer, on future Lag BaOmers, and every day of our year, we will hopefully be zoche to the bringing of Mashiach, who we know will come from David, because he was the source of hoda'ah, of shira, and tishbachos to Hashem, and we should just rejoice in the coming of Mashiach very soon. Thank you for coming.